Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into a really critical topic for 2025. We're looking at how engineering leaders are actually measuring system performance, especially now with, AI-assisted coding, incredibly complex hybrid clouds, and just this constant pressure to deliver business value.
And this whole deep dive, it's really built on a pretty crucial piece of research. It's a survey of about 400 engineering leaders and practitioners. And if you take one thing away today, it should probably be this. The old ways of reporting on performance, those legacy checklists just focused on stability, reliability, they're failing.
They just can't keep up.
Not at all. They can't keep pace with systems that are so distributed, so automated, and like you said, often built with AI's help.
Mm.
Performance has to be more than just a technical safeguard. It's got to be a measurable business enabler.
Right. And that's our mission here. We want to pull out the real signals from all that noise. Where's the budget actually going? What are teams really tracking? And I think this is the big one. Where is the biggest conflict brewing between what engineers know they need to fix and what the business is willing to pay for?
Yes.
So let's just start there with that central conflict, because the biggest surprise in this data, for me at least, was that a huge number, 67% of leaders, say performance is a high or even a top priority.
It sounds great on the surface.
It does. But then you dig into how they define performance and where the money goes, and it gets a lot more complicated.
It really does. It creates this fascinating disconnect. The intent from leadership is crystal clear. Performance matters.
Mm.
But the execution shows this real struggle to adapt old management strategies to the new technical realities.
Okay, let's unpack that first piece then, the definition. So 67% of leaders say it's a priority, but what does that actually mean in terms of raw reliability? When we hear high performance, I think most of us just think, maximum uptime.
That's the default, yeah. And that's where this uptime reality check from the data is so interesting. Maximum availability is usually defined by five nines, so 99.999% availability. Which is, what, maybe 26 seconds of downtime a month? It's tiny.
Wow. Okay, that sounds like something only a massive global company would even try to achieve.
Precisely. Because it's incredibly hard and incredibly expensive. And the data confirms this. Only 7% of the organizations surveyed actually require five nines.
Just 7%.
Yeah. Most are aiming for four nines, so 99.99%. That allows for about 4 minutes of downtime a month. Around 28% require that.
And does that change with the size of the company?
It's completely dependent on scale. That's what's so fascinating. So 51% of large organizations, we're talking 500 or more engineers, they require at least that 99.99% uptime. But then you compare that to the small shots, fewer than 20 engineers, and only 21% are aiming that high. Scale just drives that need for extreme reliability.
That makes perfect sense. The bigger you are, the less you can afford to be down. But okay, even with those different goals, when teams are actually tracking performance day to day, are they still just leaning on the old traditional metrics?
Oh, absolutely. The past still has a very heavy influence on the present. The traditional reactive metrics are still dominant. So the top metric is still the number of incidents. That's used by 69% of organizations. And that's followed very closely by severity of incidents at 60%.
So they're very backward-looking metrics. They tell you what already broke.
Exactly. They're essential for, immediate response, but they don't tell you how efficiently you're operating.
But you mentioned there's a business shift happening under the surface of those numbers.
This is what's really interesting. There's this new financial lens being applied. 44% of organizations are now including operational costs in their performance tracking. And this is huge because it pulls performance measurement out of the purely technical world and drops it right into, financial viability.
Hmm.
It means engineering leaders have to justify stability not just with uptime, but with unit economics and cost. Performance becomes a line item on the P&L.
That is a powerful shift. So moving from what they measure to how they improve, the data suggests that engineering cultures are, almost entirely inward-looking.
That is spot on. Most engineering teams are looking in a mirror. A huge 77% of them benchmark their performance against change over time. So against their own past results, they're great at tracking their own internal progress or, drift.
But only 34% benchmark against their competitors. That feels like a massive blind spot. I mean, if you're not looking over the fence, how do you know if your good is actually good or if it's just, better than we were last year?
It's a great question about competitive awareness. It shows that leaders are prioritizing this deep understanding of their own system's evolution. Maybe they feel their systems are too unique for a fair comparison. But it does signal a potential lack of external best practice ingestion.
Okay, so what about the engineers themselves, the people in the code? When you ask them what the most effective way to improve performance and reliability is, what do they say?
They go right back to the fundamentals, foundational code work. The top two levers for improvement were actually tied. First was code refactoring and paying down technical debt. And second was investing in automated testing and QA tools. Both were cited by 49% of respondents.
They want to fix the root cause, the messy old code.
Exactly. That's the engineering instinct. Fix the foundation first.
And here it is. Here's the huge hurdle we talked about. That critical foundational work is incredibly difficult to get funding for, even with that 67% priority mandate from leadership. This is the budget squeeze.
Absolutely. This is the core tension defining 2025. Engineers know what to do, clean up the tech debt, but getting the budget for that, it's a real struggle. It's hard to get money for the absolute core necessities. 66% find securing hiring budgets difficult, and 45% struggle to get new hardware approved.
And if you can't hire people or buy the servers, that tech debt just gets worse. And that struggle is made worse by how the organization actually thinks about this kind of spending.
Precisely. Nearly half, 46%, view spending on performance as just a cost of doing business. Something to be minimized, not an innovation driver, which is something you'd want to maximize.
So that non-glamorous behind-the-scenes work like refactoring tech debt, it's always going to lose the budget fight against a shiny new feature.
Or, as we're about to see, against a shiny new AI initiative.
And what are the blockers they cite, the things stopping them right now?
It's system complexity first at 42%. And right behind it is team skills and capabilities at 41%.
So the systems are too hard to understand and they can't hire or train the people they need because the budgets are too tight. What a loop.
It's a debilitating loop.
This sets up the big contrast perfectly, doesn't it? Tight budgets for the fundamentals. But this massive enthusiasm for anything with an AI label on it, where is the money going if not to hiring and hardware?
It is flowing to AI. Without a moment's hesitation, it's surprisingly easy to secure a budget for AI initiatives. Only 26% of leaders find it difficult to get that money. Just compare that to the 66% who can't get an extra engineer approved. It's a colossal difference.
So the easiest way for a leader to get budget is to just slap an AI label on the proposal.
That seems to be the strategic reality right now, and the excitement is real. 46% of organizations are actively using generative AI tools already, and another 40% are experimenting. The money is just following the hype.
But is it paying off? Is all that investment actually leading to performance gains yet?
The jury is still out. It's promising, but early. 37% of respondents say it's just too early to determine AI's impact. But among the ones who are actively using it to improve performance, a pretty decent 22% are reporting significant gains.
And what do engineers see as AI's best role? Is it a replacement for them or something that helps them?
It's clearly augmentation. Offloading the manual, repetitive work. The highest potential is seen in three areas, all tied at 35%. Documentation and content writing, code refactoring and migration, and code reviews.
So handling the repeatable structural tasks.
Exactly. It lets the human engineers focus on the high-level architecture and the really complex problem solving.
But here's where the risk starts to accelerate, right? We have this rapid, well-funded adoption of AI tools, but there's a huge monitoring gap when it comes to the AI systems themselves.
This is the ticking time bomb of 2025. It really is. We're deploying these complex, often revenue-driving systems built on large language models, or LLMs, with almost no controls. A shocking 54% of organizations using AI or LLMs do not monitor those systems. At all.
Over half are flying completely blind. They have no real idea how AI is affecting their stability or performance in production.
None. And only 22% of those using or experimenting with AI specifically monitor the AI model's performance. It shows that adoption is just massively outpacing sensible observability. We're rushing to use the new toy without building any of the safety rails.
And that failure to monitor new systems brings us right to the general state of observability across the board. What tools are organizations actually relying on today to see what's happening?
Well, the basics are still the workhorses. Dashboards are used by 73% of organizations, alerts by 69%. As for specific tools, Grafana is popular at 45%, so is Datadog at 37%. And the open source standard, OpenTelemetry, is showing really significant adoption at 31%.
But if you ask them not what they have, but what they think has the most potential value, what comes to the top?
Application performance monitoring? or APM. That jumps to the lead. 42% cite APM as having the most potential value for their day-to-day work. And that makes sense, because APM moves beyond just basic infrastructure health to actually measure the user experience, the journey of a request through all the microservices.
It suggests that while they have the basic alerts, what they desperately need is that high-context end-to-end view to debug modern apps.
They do. And this is where the tech investment really crashes into the cultural reality. Organizations have been practicing observability for a while, over half for 5 years or more. They're spending the money, 58%, spend at least $10,000 a year on tools.
So why isn't that data driving better decisions?
That's the painful reality check. It's the key lesson from this whole deep dive. Despite all that time and all that money, only 42% regularly use their observability data to inform strategic decisions, and only 8%. Just 8% report having true full-stack observability.
The problem isn't the tool, it's the culture.
It's a discipline. Observability is not a tool you buy, it's a discipline you practice. And organizations are treating it like a purchase, not a continuous learning loop. They have the tech, but the discipline to act on the data is lagging way behind.
So the big picture here is that performance is now, without a doubt, a business enabler. But the frameworks for measuring it, the budget processes, and the cultural maturity are all just struggling to keep up with the complexity of it all, and now this sudden AI mandate on top of everything.
Exactly. The pressure is on, the tools are there, but the operating model is, for lack of a better word, broken.
So for you listening to this, this data really provides a clear roadmap on how to navigate this strategically.
It does. I'd say first you have to expand your performance metrics. Get past just uptime and incidents.
Yeah.
Include operational cost, developer effort. Second, you absolutely must bridge that AI monitoring gap. If you're using LLMs, you have to apply core observability to them right now. And finally, rebalance the innovation budgets. The excitement for AI has to be matched with the real investment in the fundamentals, the tech debt, the automated testing the AI needs to actually work well.
That's the crucial link, and it leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to take away. Organizations that treat performance maturity as this continuous learning process, not just a reactive cost to be minimized, they are the ones who will define engineering excellence. So given that AI budgets are suddenly so easy to get, how can you, as a leader, leverage that executive enthusiasm, that easy money, to finally fund the critical foundation, the deep observability, and the tech debt cleanup that AI itself fundamentally relies on to be successful? That's the real strategic battleground of 2025.